Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Tonight's one-hour episode, What to Do When You Hate Your Job, Tips for You and Your Spouse, will feature Andrea St. John, a dynamic career counselor in private practice in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Andrea has successfully helped people through every type of work transition, including career break to full-time work, job-to-job change, corporate to self-employment, and full-time to retirement. Regardless of the transition, Andrea begins to work with clients with self-assessment, knowing that when people are connected to their deepest level of motivation, they can use this passion and purpose to overcome fear and make powerful changes in their work lives. She firmly believes that satisfying and rewarding work is both a right and a possibility for everyone. If you want to reach Andrea, she can be reached at www.andreastj.com. Before I bring Andrea on the air, however, one technical note. If you are listening to this episode through live streaming and you'd like to ask a question or make a comment on the air, you'll need to call in toll-free 877-497-9046. All callers should dial 1 on their phone to be in line to join us live on the air. And we're really happy to have you, so don't be shy about questions or comments. So, Andrea, hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for inviting me on, Susan.
Oh, you're welcome. I've really been looking forward to this. This is such a timely subject. It's such a pervasive problem. Job misery is such a common issue for many Americans at this time. And, you know, from my position as a therapist and coach, I see it leading to many mental health problems like depression, anxiety, hopelessness, and part of what we'll talk about tonight, you know, marital problems as well. So I think we're doing the show at a perfect time in history right now. And I guess I'm wondering, how did you come to do this work as a career counselor?
Well, I went through a career change myself. I spent 20 years in marketing and sales, and always with an interest in how people chose the function in the businesses I worked with. Always curious what people did and, again, why they chose that. And I was always interested in psychology, so I went back to school while I was still working in marketing and sales for my graduate degree and started in this work about 10 years ago. So it really is the perfect marriage between my experience, my business acumen, and my interest in helping people to look inside themselves and find more satisfying work. I love what I do.
Yeah, I can tell because everyone I have ever referred to you comes back with glowing reports about how energetic you are, how hopeful you make them feel. They often go to you with such a feeling, you know, people who are unhappy in their jobs, and that's what this show is about. They feel so hopeless and so stuck, and they, you know, they're in a very exaggerated kind of place around feeling victimized. And the reports I consistently get from the work with you is that you open up all kinds of possibilities for them, not only in terms of action and behaviors, but also attitudes. So, you know, that was part of my interest in doing the show with you, so that you could share it with the universe, not just people
who
see you in
your
office.
Thank you for your kind words. Yes, I do my best, as we all do, but thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, certainly job dissatisfaction is at an all-time high. I mean, you know, there's so many studies that are done about, you know, how people are engaged in their work and their level of satisfaction. And we see, and this is worldwide, that dissatisfaction, it's two-thirds of people are reporting that they're either dissatisfied or very dissatisfied with their work. So
really,
you're right.
Worldwide. I thought, my was, well, I'm American-centric. But my sense was that it was maybe more the American scene because in America, employers are not user-friendly in terms of family life or work-life balance, where in European countries, for instance, they seem to be more respectful of time off, downtime, et cetera. But you're saying this is worldwide.
Yes, there's been a tick up in the last 10 years worldwide, and I think it's a global economy, and every company and organization is looking to get more for less. That's just the name of the game right now. So that means people are working harder for the same and sometimes less money. So, yeah, it's a chronic problem. And, you know, we hear about numbers of unemployed people, but what is often missing from the news, Susan, is that there's a low churn rate. That's something we look at in my field, and that is that people aren't changing jobs. So there's a lot of people who feel stuck, and that's, I think, what you're alluding to when you say, you know, that feeling of being very despondent and depressed, and that's how we feel, right, when we feel trapped. So
yeah,
it's not just the experience on the job, it's the experience that there's no way out. I think that's the future looks bleak, and it's a very hard place to be.
Yeah, and I do think that, you know, I see that sense of stuckness in my work all the time, particularly with people who are hitting 50-plus, where their sense is that their skill set is not applicable to any other field. And they see people who are nearing retirement, and in the 11th hour before retirement, they get laid off, and then so they feel panicked about this is the only game in town. So it sounds like obviously one source of dissatisfaction that you would label is a sense of stuckness and no options.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the reason why people are feeling dissatisfied at work, you know, in our profession we say, you know, most people leave their boss, they don't leave their job. So that's what we see more of anything, is that people are feeling very disrespected, not appreciated. They feel as though there's poor management, no vision, decisions don't make sense. The pace of change at business is very swift, and all of that relates to their relationship with their boss. So that's the principal reason why people feel dissatisfied at work. I alluded to the other, which is that people are feeling overworked and underpaid. Mm-hmm. You know, wages have been stagnant. Healthcare is taking an even greater share of the pay. You know, companies are just doing more with less. It's a very stressful workplace out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really not, you're not seeing as much of it relate to coworkers and some of the mean-spiritedness or the competitiveness among coworkers?
I mean, it's always there. I just mentioned the three principal reasons. You know, there are many reasons why people feel dissatisfied. You know, job is dead end. There's limited career growth. There might not be challenged. The work is very boring. It's not meaningful. I hear that a lot. And I think, you know, by the time you hit midlife, most people realize, oh, there's always going to be someone in the workplace who's a little annoying or isn't pulling their weight. So you kind of get used to that after a while. So certainly there's complaints that I hear in my office all the time around, you know, slackers or snarkiness or whatever, for sure. But principally people come in because the work is just, the boss is just, you know, a very difficult situation, or that feeling of being underappreciated. I hear that all the time. And then, feeling like there's no way out.
Yeah, a feeling of being completely stuck. You know, I've read things about also the lack of meaning and how people will often opt for lesser salaries if they feel recognized, appreciated, and the work itself like it's meaningful. And that see that in my work, that people feel like they're doing moronic things, and they're locked into being a teeny little cog in this giant wheel, and they have no sense of the kind of the end product of their effort. Do you see that a lot?
Yes, for sure. Being connected to decisions that are being made from on high, you know, just no understanding of where they fit in or why what's happening is happening. Absolutely. And that lack of meaning, you know, that's another thing that's multicultural. That surprised me when I was in graduate school. I thought, oh, you know, is it just an American thing that we want to have a sense of meaning in our work. And no, that's another thing, that in every culture, people want to feel that what they're doing with their toil, with their hours, is somehow making the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, that can be defined very broadly, for sure. I'll never forget a client I had who worked for a moving company, and he found his work incredibly valuable. He felt like he was helping to transport, you know, people's things that they valued. He was trusted, and it came very natural to him, the sense of his work being meaningful. So I don't try to define what that is for a client. I've realized over the years that it's very individual, but what is important to everyone at every age is feeling like the work they do is somehow making a difference in a positive way.
Oh, absolutely. I cannot tell you how many conversations I've had with clients who talk about corporate life and the insanity of corporate life, and A, the work not being meaningful, B, not experiencing themselves as having an impact on the final effect of their work, and mostly, as you said, having a crazy boss who's a slave driver, very disrespectful. I hear a lot of things about where it feels like the inmates are running the asylum. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard. The inmates are running the asylum. And then when I ask questions from the therapist's perspective about possibilities for actions, and I'll want to get into that for you, because obviously I don't know how to ask the right questions, I invariably get the same response, which is, Susan, you are too innocent. You obviously haven't been in the corporate world either ever or for a long time. It's not the same when you work for yourself. I'll make presumptions that around what you can do to have more of an impact. And the feedback I get is that it feels intractable in a lot of ways to people. All these things feel intractable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think people feel stuck because they really feel like I can't get another job. And we hear in the news all the time, the unemployment numbers, depends on where you live in this country. It's, some areas have been hit harder than others. Certainly where we are in the Northeast, not so bad in New Hampshire, but certainly some other areas of the country, it's not that way. But nonetheless, it's always taken work to get a job. It's never been easy. But with so much media attention to the unemployment numbers, it makes people feel as though it would be fruitless to even look. And I think when you feel trapped in anything in your life, you become unhappy, right? It's just that feeling of having no options is against human nature. So I can tell you, because I do this work day in and day out, that people are getting jobs all the time. Just in the last 2 weeks, two of my clients over the age of 50 got two plum jobs. So there's movement happening. It takes creativity and perseverance, but people can move on without a doubt. But I just want to make a point, about what's changed, I think, in the last 8 or 9 years, not just the recession, but the technology, and it makes it so much harder for people to be left alone and to leave work alone with email and iPhones and all of this. It really takes a very conscious effort and some candor with a boss to set some boundaries around work.
And especially when there is no support in that culture. I've worked with a lot of people where I will ask again maybe the naive question about, is there an option for you to set some limits around answering emails that come in at 11 p.m., and does everything have to happen right now? What would happen if you were to set limits?
Yes, great questions.
Talk about how, that's not the way it works in my environment. There's always somebody else trying to grab my spot who's a workaholic and who's a suck-up and is willing to work 20 hours a day. So, it looks to me like a lot of it has to do with just the pervasive culture of overwork that helps to make people feel so trapped.
Yes, although cultures vary so much from industry to industry and company to company. I mean, it's remarkable that someone who is having a miserable experience in the same function and industry but a different company will have a completely different experience. So that just like there are families that are dysfunctional, there are bucket loads of companies that are dysfunctional. And when it's hard to, sometimes it's hard to see that when you're interviewing, because it's like, you know, the first dates, everybody's on their best behavior. It takes a very shrewd and prepared candidate to be able to, who is willing to do some research to see beneath that veneer, to identify a dysfunctional company before entering. But absolutely, I mean, some of the stories I hear, it's very discouraging, but I wouldn't have the faith and be able to help people the way that I do unless I had a very clear conviction that there are workplaces where people are expected to lead healthy lives. Because
okay, so it sounds like part of what you're saying is that in terms of the impact on the employee who hates their job, it sounds like other than obvious you know, a depressive experience and feeling very trapped and stuck, it sounds like what you're saying is that there's also a kind of globalization on their part. They kind of globalize the experience to all you know, it's hard for them to see beyond the edge of their nose and recognize that maybe I can enter a different culture with these same skills and feel more appreciated and recognized and feel happier.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. It's hard for people to realize that they don't have to be living that way, that there are other options, other companies that have a very different culture. Because it's like the idea of vacation time, right? All companies, at least you start off with 2 weeks vacation, which isn't very much, obviously, but a vacation time doesn't benefit the employee. I mean, it's principally, of course, it benefits the employee. What I mean to say is it's given in order to allow the employee to have some respite time and to, in that way, ensure productivity. I mean, that's the cynical way of looking at it. From the business point of view, people cannot be working all the time and stay productive and fresh and creative. They cannot do it. So it's unrealistic to expect a level of engagement and industry without giving people a break. It's just it's not humanly possible.
Absolutely.
And I think what happens is...
Yeah, they need to refuel.
They need to refuel, exactly. So what I'm saying is that's a dysfunctional workplace that would expect someone to work, you know, 20 hours a day or respond to emails off time, you know, with a short turnaround. I mean, it's not realistic that someone be accessible like that. And they would the wheels would come off of their bus, so to speak, and they cannot be a productive employee. But I cannot tell you how many times in my office I've had to tell people that what they're experiencing is not ubiquitous, that there are companies that have sane and healthy work cultures. I mean, there may be seasons of stress, for sure, but it's not a perpetual situation where that demand is expected in an unrelenting way. It's impossible.
Okay, so you begin to challenge, obviously, in your work, and we'll get to that a little later, but it sounds like part of what you do that's really impactful is you challenge the assumptions that this is a universal.
Exactly,
and you
exactly.
Open their eyes
that's right.
and educate them about maybe other companies that maybe are more user-friendly. And I'm going to want to go into detail with you about what you actually do, you know, with clients who come in who are feeling a lot of job misery. Is, you know, while we're on the subject of the impact on the employee, I mean, we've talked about feeling trapped, feeling stuck, limited vision. Is there anything else that you see when somebody's in a job that they dislike that you see coming into your office as the impact that it has on that employee?
Yes. I mean, as you mentioned, people are depressed. They're anxious. And we know that when we're anxious, our cognitive abilities shrink. So there's often a cycle that people get in where they are anxious, they're depressed, they're less productive at work, so they get more anxious. You know, some of the reasons why people don't like their jobs, we haven't touched on it yet, is because they're not doing them well, either because they don't have the mandated skill set or the job is poorly designed or there's so many reasons why people are in jobs that don't fit, but that's a huge source of job stress. But when we see people being anxious and depressed, we know that they're not. It's like if they had four cylinders in their engine, they only have three now. So that is a cycle that's set up that when I see that in my office, you know, my own heart goes out to the client to really suggest that they make a move, because what happens is once your performance starts to fall off, because you're either very unhappy or you're anxious or depressed, and then that insecurity starts to play in, you can easily, it's easy to go downward into a spiral where you could potentially, you know, be laid off because you're just not measuring up.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that so often in my work with couples, you know, where it'll come into the room, somebody will talk about how they were triggered yet again in their miserable job, and what is obvious is how the more triggered they get, the more anxious they get, the more depressed they get, the more distorted their thinking gets, and the less they can kind of access what I call agency, you know, the ability to kind of act on your own behalf effectively. And then the more, it's a whole cycle, then there's more anxiety and depression, and that's when I see, you know, the impact on the couple is really pretty bad, because the partner then gets caught up in the whole cycle and feeling like, you know, you have to suck up, you're just, a few years from retirement. Often they'll start threatening to leave suddenly, impulsively. Well, that would really screw us up. You really can see it unfold in the relational realm, in, you know, when you have a couple and you see the impact of the whole, the distorted thinking and how anxiety and, you know, becomes a kind of endless vicious cycle.
Yes, and oftentimes people feel controlled, right? They feel trapped and controlled. And you know, where does that come out at home is, you know, I don't want to be controlled by anybody. I've been controlled all day long at work. You know, I feel completely out of control on the job. Then it makes me much less likely to want to compromise, right, with my partner, because I feel like on the job I'm, getting beaten up. So it's a very, there's a lot of, I get referrals from marriage counselors like yourself, and certainly therapists of all kind, because of the cost of the job dissatisfaction on health, stress, depression, relationships, finances. I mean, we haven't talked about that yet, but when people feel like they are, working hard, you know, in something they don't like, they often, you know, spend more because they feel like, well, I deserve this. I'm so bloody miserable at work that I'm going to go do this to assuage my depression or it's tough.
Yes, so you see some very unhelpful coping strategies, you know, impulsive kinds of coping strategies that don't solve the problem. And what do employees report to you as the what do they see as the impact on their partnerships? Because, you know, I can say it from my perspective working with both people in the room, but what do you hear?
Well, you know, we talk a lot about spouses in our room, in my room, because there's, you know, a spouse has some say into what choices the employee makes, right? So it's not unusual for me to be referred by a spouse. I get calls regularly. Can you help my husband? I'm going to make an appointment for my wife to see you. They have, most people, you know, don't want to be a nag, but they want to support their spouse and encourage them and not be a nag, but it's a fine line. And so they often look for me, to me, to, provide some expansion of the career imagination is how I put it. You know, people often, it's almost like, Susan and I were getting off topic a little bit here, but this is why people come to me, because, you know, it's like we're all little kids still when we think about a career with respect to what are you going to be? Well, I'm going to be a policeman, a doctor, a fireman, you know, or a teacher, or a nurse, or something like that. Most people lack the ability to to think about other things that they can do. And so what typically happens is a spouse will have tried to support their partner and said, you know, why don't you do this, or you could do this, or you can do that, and what about this? And, you know, they start out from a place of tremendous goodwill. But then when the partner does nothing except come back home every night and complain and do nothing, it's easy for that partner then to become pretty frustrated.
Oh, absolutely. I see a lot of distance and disconnection and compassion fatigue happening as a result of
compassion fatigue, yes, exactly. So a lot of times, you know, a spouse will call me and say, you know, I don't want to talk to my partner about this anymore. You know, can you help them? I can't help them anymore. And, of course, if someone is in my office and they don't really, you know, the motivation is not internal, it's hard to do this work. But most of the time when people come to see me, they can, you know, within a few sessions realize, oh, I can think about this a lot differently than I've been thinking about it. I see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's some
great
shift. There, yeah.
You really expand the frame. One of the things that I see in my work with couples, and I don't know if the employee talks to you about this, but I will often see the employee doing what we call carrying the affect, where not the employee, the partner
yeah.
kind of carrying the outrage and the rage for the employee who's depressed or in denial about an abusive boss. And so the partner will go into a rage about, how could you put up with that? And it just makes the employee feel more stuck.
Right, right. Yes.
You hear people talk about that, how, you know, my spouse is going off on me and I can't do anything and they don't understand that I have to put up with this.
We don't get into that much detail. You know, I would say that I more hear, you know, my wife really wants me to get a new job, or my husband has suggested that I come and see you because I can't figure out what to do next, or, you know, that's more of what I hear. You know, certainly you get into a lot of deep, you know, personal issues. I think career decision-making is a lot about values clarification, and anytime you're talking about values, you're talking about very deep intrapersonal issues. And so, but in terms of the detail with which we don't get into a lot of detail frequently about what's going on around this dissatisfaction at home.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So you really focus on the, you know, mostly on the experience of the employee and what's going to need to change in order for things to change. Well, I guess that
exactly.
takes us...
Certainly, we talk about how you can, you know, work with your spouse in a supportive way. We talk about that a lot. Well, you know, do you think your spouse could help you with this, or is your partner on board? You know, one of the questions I ask in the intake form that clients fill out has to do with, you know, who's on your side, who's on your support team, because we need to call on those people. It's,
right.
You know, during any kind of change, which is stressful, we need to call on our support team. So it's very helpful for me to have a sense of who those people are for the client. And most
That's
often,
great.
I would say people
and,
list their spouse. Yeah.
The client to pull that up and to recognize that. Now, I'm wondering, before we get to the next topic about empowering actions that you would recommend and what you do with people, I just want to – we have several listeners who are with us, and if anybody would like to ask a question, you're welcome to ask a question. I'll pause at a few different intervals. Feel free to do that, and if I don't see your I see your number, and if I don't see it light up, we'll just move on. Okay. No. Well, I have one question here. Let me just Hello, caller from 917 area code. Can you tell us what your question is or your comment?
Yes. Hello, Susan. I wanted to ask your guest. I think when people, my experience, when people are unhappy with their work, and so many of us look at work, it's like our lifeline at times, people tend to lose their confidence. So I'm wondering what you tell people, other than, if at all, other than the traditional talk therapy or, you know, getting things off your chest, how to build your confidence, or if that's going to be in the next part of the session. What what are good examples of and resources to help build someone's confidence? Because I think we do lose our confidence if we've been, we lose perspective when we are not happy. We totally lose our ability to think clearly at times because it's all encompassing.
Yes, that's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked it.
And I'm so sorry. Yes, I can't remember your name.
Oh, Andrea,
that's
okay.
A very long day.
That's okay. And when you're right, and that's often, it's a lack of confidence that keeps people from looking for a new job. I talked a little bit about a need for more imagination about what the options are, but certainly confidence is key. I'm so glad you brought that up. And when I'm working with folks, there are several ways that we try to boost that confidence. And one of the first ways would be to take a look at, work experience in the last 10 or 15 years and really bring to mind and articulate times during which the client is feeling engaged, good about their work, satisfied, happy, and there are always sometimes, as miserable as someone is at their job, if they're looking just at the tasks or the projects or the interactions that they're having, there's always something that they can identify as, moments or activities in which they were at their best. And when we start to talk about those times, it helps the client just really shift mood-wise, as well as begin to inventory, hey, I did do good at that, and that was cool, and I really enjoyed that. And then we start to dissect those experiences and look at themes. And then what emerges is a very clear sense of what needs to be the predominant activities in the next job. Maybe they have dwindled in frequency, or maybe there's been, a change in the product line or whatever. A job is never static. People's jobs change from year to year, even though they're in the same position. So it could be that they haven't done any of those things for a while. So recollecting them not only helps to boost their confidence, but it also helps us to really get some clues as to work experiences that are going to be much more satisfying and enjoyable. And they're going to be more successful at, because typically when people are working from their strengths, there and enjoying their work, they're just really good at it, right?
Great. Yes. Thank you very much.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, I could keep on going on and on about it, but that's the first place we go, is to just try to recollect those times of engagement,
success, or accomplishment.
Exactly. Appreciative inquiry, we could call it.
But do you ever find though that it is typical and it's very difficult for people to sometimes really see that because they're too close to it?
Yes. Yes, and that's why they often work with me, to try to get some perspective on that. And then we also try to help clients to begin to talk with other people in their profession. And that sometimes they might not, if they can hear it from me to say, hey, doing that job in a different place might look like this. But if they start to talk and with other people in similar industry or function to themselves, and realize, wow, I'm doing a lot at my job, more than most people in my position, or wow, I've gotten that project, and that's a real feather in my cap. Or they could talk to people and realize, wow, that job in that culture, that's very different than what I'm doing. So you haven't even started to look for a job yet, and yet there's experiences and knowledge that you're gaining that are very liberating and really make that shift for someone. It's
great.
That
thank you. That's very helpful. That makes a lot of sense, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Carla. That was a wonderful question.
Yeah, very good question.
So it sounds, Andrea, like part of what you do in terms of attitude and behavior, in terms of empowerment, is you help somebody draw on their own internal experience that pulls up an experience of competence, and you encourage them to check out with other people to, make connections with other people who can validate that experience, especially if they're not getting validation from a boss.
Exactly.
They're in.
That's right. That's right. That's well said. That's exactly right. I mean, if people are feeling unhappy at their job, they can either stay and they can complain, you know, that amplifies the negativity and helplessness. It drags down the team. You know, people can easily become passive-aggressive. People can stay and be silent. It's more politically correct. But, of course, it's not healthy to bottle up feelings. So we want to be talking about it somewhere in our lives when we're unhappy. But, you know, more helpful tactics, a more helpful approach would be either to seek to make the current job different or to begin to look for a new job. Generally speaking, when someone is trying to make their current job better, you know, the first step would be to assess, you know, what's working, what's not working. What's in your control, what's not in your control. Let's really be specific about what's going on here. And and then talking with your boss to see whether, you know, depending upon the relationship you have with your boss, obviously, you know, sometimes there can be an explanation as to why things the way they are that can pacify an employee. Sometimes there are some changes that can be made in responsibilities or reporting that can make a situation a lot better. A boss can prioritize things when people are feeling overworked so that the employee has a very clear roadmap, you know, knows where the hoop that they're shooting for is. That's what I hear a lot of unhappiness is around too. Like, I'm not sure how my performance is being measured. I don't know what's important and not important. Those are some things that can sometimes be clarified through a productive conversation with a boss. Sometimes in every position there's some latitude. Sometimes people can take on a more interesting project. They can try to mold the job to be more, to include more of what's liked and less of what's not liked. People can learn new skills that will benefit the company. And sometimes just that newness can reinvigorate an employee. So, you know, someone can start to set their career goals and then start working on them at their current company. At their current company, yeah, you could get another job in another department. Many people have done that I've worked with.
Maybe a first line of inquiry would be if there's any way that they can make the current situation more palatable, more pleasant for themselves. And I guess what if you go down that road with somebody and they make it really clear to you that they're in an insane system where people do not care about they're kind of locked into a very automated role. They're objectified. Their feedback is not valued. They're in a system. I've talked to people who are in a system where there's no normal feedback loop, where the boss on high doesn't care about if people are happy. He doesn't even notice that the unhappiness is related to lower sales. Is that the point at which you would, if somebody reports that to you, that you would begin to explore, okay, then what are the options for movements elsewhere?
Yes, yeah, I would certainly suggest that. I mean, but in the short term, I would say, you know, try to make the most of your personal time. Do the things you like to do. That can often impact, you know, lessen the impact of work. I'd say, you know, try to erect those boundaries. So, you know, which, again, we talked about technology is a little harder. You know, fill the time outside of your work with meaning and start to look for a new job. Sometimes just knowing there's an exit plan makes the current job more palatable. I hear that over and over again. Somehow
absolutely. You know, I've had this conversation with clients where, you know, I found myself saying something to the effect to them that, you know, maybe right now your work is not the primary area where you're going to find meaning. And your work is only one part of your life right now. And ideally, you know, that will change, but where else can you find meaning and nourish yourself and engage your brain if your work is not the place where you've exhausted every possibility and it's really clear that it's not going to happen there? And people respond to that well.
Yes, I agree. I agree. That's very good advice. Very sound. You know, in terms of, you know, coping with a lousy job, whether you've decided to stay or you're just biding your time until you leave, you know, there are some attitudes that can make a difference. You know, reminding yourself that this isn't permanent, as you just said, this is a, you know, the static, you know, this is a situation right now, but it doesn't have to be permanent. You know, even diversifying your life by including, you know, new things like an evening art class, seeing old friends, volunteering. Sometimes that can really help to create, pardon me, some new habits, some new activities to break up the monotony of the rut that you're in, just going to work, then thinking about work, going to work, thinking about work, you know, just to break that cycle. And the networking mm-hmm. piece, when you get out and about, it gives you new perspective. It's very useful.
Well, really important feedback. You network and you connect with other people. You know, you can relate to other people. You often will get more positive feedback, so it really nourishes self-esteem in a way that a lousy job won't. I know that's especially true for people I've worked with. You know, I see this problem is so pervasive for people, especially once they've hit 60, and mm-hmm. they need to work. They're not ready for retirement, and they feel like they're increasingly more devalued, that they're considered dinosaurs. You know, the companies can get somebody who's 20-something for a fraction of the price, and they feel like a piece of meat. And I will find myself talking about that very thing you're talking about. Where else can they, what else can they change in their lives so that it kind of mitigates the current job situation while they're
mm-hmm.
there?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, is there anything else just in terms of empowering actions that you recommend? And it might be useful maybe to pretend I'm a client coming in to see you. What, let's say, you know, I come in and I report that I hate my job. What are some of the other kinds of things that you would do that would be empowering recommendations for empowering actions?
If you're staying on the job or if you're looking for a new job or you're trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, if I'm trying to figure out what to do, I feel stuck.
Yeah,
so, I don't have much vision, right?
Yep, we take a look at, you know, what's working and what's not working. Like I said before, you know, we just, you know, really try to be specific. What's making you unhappy? Was there ever a time on the job when you were happy? What's changed since then? You know, again, it's often an issue with a supervisor. So we'll take a look at, tell me about some times when, you know, your supervisor, it really gets under your skin. And then we'll talk about how to manage up or manage your supervisor. You know, there's always a little bit of wiggle room there. You're not going to change someone's basic temperament, but you can learn how to communicate with a supervisor differently such that you're getting your needs met a little better than in the past, perhaps. So
Manage up.
Yeah, that is a key part of anyone's position, but when the problem is the supervisor, you know, we have to really focus on, you know, the interactions, what you want to happen with your boss that's not happening and what is happening that you don't want to happen. You know, we have to look more closely at what that is.
Okay.
So by putting some specifics to, you know, those questions, what's working, what's not working, was there ever a time when it was working, why did you take the job, what were you hoping it would be, you know, really getting to some of these more reflective, helping the client to reflect on some of these bigger issues. And then getting a sense of that, you know, what would you want to be doing at the company now? And once we see what the problems are, then we can start to see whether there's any latitude, you know, strategizing about making the current job any different than it is right now. And then if there is, if after a few things are tried, there is no movement, and there frequently is, Susan. This is the good news, is that there's often the employee often has more power than they realize they do, because if they're a decent employee and they're, you know, decent enough to get along with, the employer doesn't want to replace the person. It's costly. It's a risk. There's a loss of productivity while the new employee gets up and running. So they want to make things work for an employee. So what I find is that oftentimes a client will come in, and once we get beyond the sort of venting, which is an important part of this, without a doubt, and we really start to put, you know, our left brain to the task here, we see that there are a lot of conversations and tactics that can be employed to change the current situation at the job. So, but if after we try some of those things, that then there is no change, then we start to say, okay, you know, what about looking for a new job? And generally, there's openness to that. Once I explain, you know, there's a way to look for a job effectively, and there's a way to look for a job ineffectively. So, you know, we want to get you on board with the ways of looking for a job that are going to be most productive. And there's a lot of relief that comes from that alone. If someone has tried their best to modify the job in such a way that it can be more livable and more satisfying, that's great. But if not, you know, it's time to move on.
Okay, it's kind of like with a marriage. If you feel like you've left no stone unturned and nothing changes, you make more peace with the notion of divorce.
Yes, that's exactly right. I think that's a great analogy. And there are a lot of analogies between work and choosing work and courtship and all of that, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And, you know, oftentimes we find that there's some communication skills that have to be learned on the job that have to be learned in one's personal life as well. And so that's why I believe that career counseling is, you know, a gift to oneself. It's a tremendous exercise in self-growth because you're having to look at yourself from the perspective of
challenging some of the distortions in thinking and the pervasive, you know, the globalization of the problem. It sounds like you help people partialize the problem and really break it down and see, well, where are their options for change? You know, people, it sounds like in a cloud of negativity and everything's bad, and that you really help people look at, well, really, what might be changeable that maybe you haven't thought about. And that sounds like that's huge just in terms of opening up options and changed attitudes.
Yes, and that getting out of that feeling of being trapped, say, okay, there's something I can do here. I'm willing to try this for sure.
Right.
You know, especially when someone's worked at a place for a long time, they're just in habits. I mean, you see that. It's like habits in any relationship where, you know, we just have to think about this a little bit differently.
Absolutely.
Go about things a little bit differently, yes. But every job has some latitude in it. That's why a job is never done the same twice by two different people. Everyone brings their own stamp to it, if you will. So.
Okay, and it's like that's a myth. The myth that a lot of employees carry is that they're totally expendable, that they don't realize that it's too costly for most employers to replace them.
Yes, absolutely. An employer would rather work with someone to make them, you know, happier, more productive, a better team player, all of those things, than replace them. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, what about looking for a new job? Andrea, what do you do with clients in your work and helping them? Let's say they've exhausted every possibility and they decide, nope, nothing's changed. What are some of the things that you do that are empowering in terms of helping clients expand outward and begin to explore other options?
Well, it's first figuring out, you know, what do you like about your job? What do you wish you could be doing? What do you want more of? What do you want less of? Again, that it starts with that self-assessment piece. Tell me about times at work that you've been happy. Tell me about the successes you're most proud of. Tell me who you envy at work. You know, looking, you know, what are your interests? What do you imagine that you could do? Everyone is, you know, even if you're completely satisfied at work, you're always thinking, what am I going to do next? What else am I going to do? Everybody's always thinking about that. So I often want to hear about the content of people's daydreams over the years because I think that most people really do know what they want. In their next job, they do know what they want to do next. They feel like, I don't know what I want, but then when you look at those things I just mentioned, there, you know, an image appears. It's clear the direction they want to go to next. It's clear the kind of job that would be more satisfying. So then we take a look at, you know, what are the qualifications for that kind of a job, and we look at the client's qualifications. And sometimes there's a skill gap, and that's okay. It's not the best news, but it's okay. It's just a problem to be solved. Then we look at, okay, that job, you could be qualified for that job. Maybe you're qualified for it now. That's great. Let's write a resume. Let's get you networking to talk about your skills and evidence of those skills that are most valuable for a potential employer. That's great. But if there is a skill gap, then we need to think creatively about how you can develop that skill so that you can be a competitive candidate for the type of job that you know that you would be happier in.
Do you ever find yourself telling somebody, you're just not going to live long enough to develop that kind of skill? You know, you're 60 years old maybe, and you want to be a doctor now? Do you think you're going to live 20 years? I mean, do you ever find yourself scaling down somebody's dreams and dealing with something that's so unrealistic you need to help them revamp?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I try not to dampen anyone's dreams because I don't think that that's useful. Normally in those circumstances, when we start to walk down a road, okay, so this it feels like you want to be a physician. Tell me, you know, why, what is it about being a physician? What do you picture yourself doing that you think you'd really enjoy and be doing well? And so, you know, usually the client has had some thought about this. Let's say that they want to become a physician and they're 50 or something. Is that what you're saying, someone like this? So then we'll say, okay, let's look at what preparation will entail. And they'll do some research. We'll discuss it in the office. And then normally a client will come to their own conclusion. They'll say, you know what? You know, there's always a risk-reward ratio for anyone. Any career change or job change involves sacrifice and risk, right? So it's always trying to mitigate that risk and mitigate that sacrifice. So most of the time in that situation, a client will eventually come to the point and say, you know what? I don't think that it's worth it. I don't think that I want to spend all that money and spend all those years in med school to become a physician. But then we'll say, okay, let's look at those things that you pictured yourself doing that you thought you would really enjoy as a physician. Let's look at what other jobs in the medical field, or who knows, maybe it's just the idea that they're helping or advising. I don't know. It depends on what part of being a physician they thought would be really cool. Then it's not impossible to come up with another job or another career track that involves that, you know, engages that same interest, whatever it was that was drawing them into medicine, and some of the similar role, you know, whatever they were looking forward to. So it's, again, about that imagination piece. Most people have a much more limited sense of what kinds of jobs are out there than are actually out there. They only know the jobs that their life has helped them come in contact with. They don't know all of the other ones.
Okay.
So I can guide them.
Like your role, part of your role is to help them kind of get away from the identifying of the job itself to what are the functions in the job, the aspects of the job, the use of themselves, and what other careers or jobs might entail those functions.
Exactly.
If it's
exactly.
Unrealistic.
That's very well said, right. So
okay. There's
something driving them to being a physician. Let's figure out exactly what that is, and if they decide themselves that it's not worth the money and time, then let's figure out something else that has a similar kind of role in a field that interests them.
Okay. Now I have
somebody
who's had a question here for a while, so I want to bring this person on the air. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Can you hear the caller, Andrea?
I cannot
hear the caller. You have a 603 area code caller, but I don't hear you. You might want to call back. Check your audio on your phone and call back, okay? And let me see if I can bring you on now. Let me give this person a minute to call back because they've had this question going for a long time. But it sounds like it's vision expanding for you, Andrea. And are you then likely, Andrea, to come up with a list of different industries, different jobs that would incorporate those functions that somebody really is excited about?
Yes. I mean, together, using some reference tools online, books and the like, we'll come up with a list together of positions that seem to contain the things that are most important to the client. And that's when I say most important, most people have a list of things that they want in their job. You know, this is not uncommon that someone will say, I want this, 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 and this. And then when we look at the list, some of the things are mutually exclusive. And so part of career counseling, I mentioned this earlier, is about values clarification. So we'll look at that list, and I'll say, you know what, we have to break this into two lists. We have to say these are must-haves and these are would-like-to-have. And let's focus on the most important things, the things that are most important to you. And it's so different for everyone, Susan. It's remarkable to me.
You know, it's really a fascinating process. Caller has called back, so let me see if I can bring them on the air.
Okay.
Hello, caller. You want to try again? You have a 603
area
code.
Yeah, can you hear me this time? Hello?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Oh, good. This is Curtis from New Hampshire. I wonder, Andrea, if you work with any retired people who have had a fruitful and gratifying career and who don't have quite enough money to retire on, need to go out and work and find that their, you know, profession just doesn't relate to jobs that are available, and so they take a job and find it totally ungratifying and frustrating and start getting depressed. What would you tell these people?
I certainly work with clients regularly who are emerging from retirement for a number of different reasons. And, I would first look at the skill set that the client has from their former profession and creatively see where we could plug that in. But I'd also be curious about why the current job isn't working out. What is it exactly that is not fruitful?
Well, I guess part of it is, being at the other end of the leash in terms of having any authority and responsibility and basically being treated in, you're a peon and you're going to do this and you're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And something to which I was never familiar with. Seeing businesses terribly mismanaged. I mean, you talked about that earlier in your conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But as a retiree, it's like, well, where else do I go from here? And that can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm. And so do you feel that your current job is dissatisfying because it's a very small subset of the skills that you have? You're underemployed, in other words?
Well, yeah, in a sense it's a very small subset, but in a sense it's also the misdirection of the skills that are available and the lack of understanding on the employer's part of what these skills can actually do for the employer.
Mm. So you're not being utilized to your potential?
Totally.
Yes. And do you feel as though you've had some conversations with your employer to inform them of some of the things you've done in your past that evidence these skills and give them examples of how these skills can add profit to the company?
There's no openness to conversation.
Okay. I could see why that would be very frustrating. And are there the skills that you prefer to use at this point in your life?
There would be skills that I prefer to use, but the investment in terms of using them at this point in life is far too risky, and I'm not sure that I would have the ambition to go forth as I did when I was 20 years old.
Mm-hmm. Would you mind being more specific about the skills that you would want to continue to use that you're not using right now?
To develop businesses in the retail sector, which is what I did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of doing that is phenomenal. And I'm not sure that I would be willing to risk that type of cost at this point.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the other things you've considered doing other than working for this employer?
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, when you're an independent business person, your skills are not transferable to any large degree to another employer.
Mm-hmm. You mean you had your own business before, retail before?
Yeah, 10.
Mm-hmm. And now you're employed by someone that is not acknowledging your skills in growing that business.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, many people as they age are hired as consultants for small and large businesses. And in that way, they are able to use some of their higher level skills in an advisory capacity, which you know, people often can appreciate the wisdom earned by people who are, you know, of your age. So, you know, that's one thing that comes to mind. There are many groups and that hire consultants, and then many people in older age become self-employed consultants. Of course, that's an uneven revenue stream, so it's a little bit difficult, and you've got to be a rainmaker, you've got to bring in your own clients. So those are two things that come to mind that certainly you've earned your stripes, you've earned your wisdom, you have a good track record, it sounds like, of success with these 10 retail outlets. So, you know, there may be systems also, you know, what comes to mind also is the systems that are used in those kinds of businesses. You may get involved with working for some of those companies that sell those systems, because any kind of system like that has to be, you have to train someone on it, you have to install it, you have to apply it. I mean, I don't know what your strengths were as a business owner, what piece was your favorite, but it would be interesting to see whether you could be out and about helping other small companies to, for example, employ a software or an inventory control or security, you know, all the different elements that are part of running a successful small business.
That might be a very good idea. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I'm glad you called.
Yes. Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you, caller. Andrea, this sounds like a case in point of how you might help somebody look at how their skills are transferable to other things to kind of enlarge the frame.
Yes, exactly. Yep, yep. And most people lack objectivity about themselves. Most people don't realize what their strengths are, Susan, because they're so used to using them comfortably, they think everybody else has them.
Or they attach it to a specific job. And they think, well, it's connected to that job, rather than these are strengths and capacities that I carry with me wherever I go, and it's just a matter of finding the right environment that will allow those strengths to flourish.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Now,
and
Andrea,
go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I want you to go ahead, Susan. I feel like I've been talking too much.
What I was going to say is, unfortunately, we're out of time. I cannot believe it, but we're out of time.
Wow.
And what occurs to me is that we are going to need to do a follow-up show because I would like to talk more in a follow-up show about the role for a supportive spouse. Mm. And, you know, I know things about respectful boundaries and unsolicited advice and listening and, you know, being clear that you're not the person in charge of this, but trying to be compassionate without taking over. But I would like in a subsequent show to talk more about that. The other question I had for you was, when is it time to quit? And it sounds like obviously when somebody has exhausted all possibilities, you know, markers of that, any more details about that. But unfortunately, this was like one of the quickest hours.
We barely touched
the surface. So would you be willing to come on again in the near future and do a subsequent show to go into more depth? Because there are other people on the line, and I'm sure, you know, given time, that they would probably want to ask you questions also.
Yes, I'd be happy to. Susan, I'm so appreciative of your inviting me on.
You've been a wonderful guest. I really appreciated it. You've really had terrific insights, and I know I've learned a lot, and hopefully other people have. And so I want to thank you, and I mean that. I will definitely invite you on again. And I want to thank our callers, the people who asked questions and the people who were just listening. I see you there. I know you're listening. In terms of future contact, Andrea, if somebody wants to contact you, my sense is that they go to www.andreastj.com. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
And my number's on there, and you can contact me through my website easily by email.
Okay, and they could find out a little bit more about you, I gather, on the website, a little bit more details about your practice, et cetera, on the website?
Exactly, and there's a page of resources where listeners can get names of books and websites that can be helpful.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And it sounds like you're taking new clients at this point. You're open to working with more people?
Yes, and I do work on the phone. Some clients I work with have never come in my office. I work with them only over the phone.
That's great. I was going to ask that you work remotely because we have some people who are calling in from area codes I don't even recognize. So obviously there are people all over who are, you know, I know, who are wrestling with this problem who might want to work with you. And that's great that you do remote work also. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Now, in terms of callers and listeners, you can tune into my next episode on Wednesday, December 11th at 8 p.m. I think I'm going to be moving to an 8 p.m. slot. This is kind of late for most normal people. My co-host will be Meredith Richardson, an attorney, mediator, and conflict coach that I'm doing more work with, and we're going to be dealing with conflict, connection, and communication for couples and how they intersect. So don't miss the date. So take care, and I look forward to being with you again then. And take care, Andrea.
Good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.